talking to me?
Funny like I'm a clown, I use you.
Here's Johnny.
He's looking at you, kid.
We're on a mission from God.
Go ahead. Make my day.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
Good morning. Today is July 18th. This is the We Are Movie Geeks podcast. I'm Tom Stockman.
Jim Batts.
And
I should be at the convention. What is this? We Are Movie Greeks.
No.
I've seen Anthony Quinn. He's great. Not like me, but he's good enough.
Don't make me be a clown.
That's the wrong movie. Requiem for a Heavyweight. Get it right. I'm here to waste my time.
That's right. It's unbelievable. We have presidential candidate Donald Trump in the studio with us today. I can't believe what a coup we have, Jim.
Oh, my goodness. We're too important for words. Yes.
That's really nice of you. I know you're right in the middle of the Republican convention, Mr. Trump, but it's super nice of you to stop by the We Are Movie Geeks. It's Movie Geeks, by the way, not Movie Greeks.
Whatever I say it is.
So how's the convention going so far?
There are a lot of non-entities that are going to speak first before I get on. We got to put up with them.
I see. Okay. So what are you doing in St. Louis?
I came here to honor you people.
Okay. Well, we appreciate that.
Oh, it's quite an honor.
So you chose Mike Pence as your running mate, it looks like. I was hoping you'd choose Clint Eastwood.
Yeah, well, I'm kind of glad that he didn't. I mean, a number of years ago, I talked to an empty chair, and I don't appreciate an empty head.
Okay, there you go. Okay, well, thanks, Mr. Trump. This is super exciting that you stopped by today. And
Oh, because I lost. I was born in Brooklyn, not St. Louis. I loved that film with Jimmy Stewart. You know, Mr. Sanders goes to Washington.
Oh, yeah, have you met Bernie Sanders? What about Hillary Clinton? Have you met Hillary Clinton?
What difference does it make now?
I'm going to tell you something right now. That woman has treated me like dirt. If she wins, I am moving to Canada. It's about time you feel my pain.
Yeah, I don't blame you. All right, what we're going to do now, we're going to call Michelle McHugh, and she is going to talk about the top 10 at the box office. Hold tight. Okay, we've got Michelle McHugh on the phone to talk about the top 12. Good morning, Michelle.
Good morning, everybody. Good morning, Tom. Good morning, Jim.
Good and morning, Michelle.
You're not going to believe this, but in the studio today is our special guest. We actually have presidential candidate Donald Trump. I'm serious.
Really?
Mr. Trump, say hi to Michelle McHugh.
Hello, Michelle McHugh. I am honoring you. Just listen to what I have to say. Don't interrupt because I won't repeat. Miracles still happen. In Trump, all things are possible.
Good deal. Are you ready for the convention tonight?
As I said before, if you'd have been listening, I don't like wasting my time. A lot of people that aren't important are going to speak, and then I will eventually. Remember it.
Words to live by. Donald Trump.
Awesome.
Unbelievable.
Good deal.
All right. So, Michelle, let's talk about the top 10. We got a lot of movies to review, so let's hear what went on at the box office over the weekend. I heard Ghostbusters didn't beat something.
The Pets.
Yeah, exactly. That was it's interesting box numbers totals this weekend estimates. The top 12 domestic weekend box office estimates are here for Sunday, July 17th. The Secret Life of Pets is number one again with $50.6 million. The film has brought in over $200 million domestically, so still doing really well with audiences.
Wow.
Yeah, it's about a 50% drop, so that's still very impressive, yeah.
Yeah, for a second weekend, $50 million, yeah, it's doing really well. So good news for that studio who brought us, you know, Minions and all those other delightful. And they have that new film coming out later this year called Sing, which I'm kind of looking forward to. The second trailer is really delightful.
Okay.
In the number two spot is Ghostbusters with $46 million.
Yeah, 46, huh?
Yeah, that's about what they 46. Predicted, wasn't it?
Yeah, that's what Sony was saying. Starring Melissa McCarthy, Kristen Wiig, Kate McKinnon, and Leslie Jones, the film scared up a solid $19.1 million from 3,900 screens in three major territories in its international debut.
Mr. Trump, did you see the new Ghostbusters?
When I have time, I have been watching films of myself. First things first. Ordinary people later.
Okay.
I'm great. You know it. Why repeat it?
Okay. How about number three, Michelle? What was that?
One quick note on Ghostbusters. Sony shelled out an expensive $144 million to make Paul Feig's film and millions more to market the film. So we'll see how it does in the end, especially at this coming weekend's box office, which is like jam-packed. The Legend of Tarzan is number 3 with $11.1 million. This film is closing in on the $200 million mark worldwide.
An unexpected hit.
Yeah, that's doing really well. I hope they, you know, who knows? We'll see if Warner Brothers shells out more money for a sequel.
Yeah.
It would be nice. So, Finding Dory is number 4. Disney's film brought in $11 million. The Finding Nemo sequel now has a global take of $721 million. So
I'm multi-talented. I do impressions.
Yeah, okay.
And number 5 is Mike and Dave Need Wedding Dates with $7.5 million. This brings 20th Century Fox's raunchy comedies domestic receipts to $31.3 million.
Yeah, so it's definitely turning a profit now. Yeah, yeah, because that didn't take much money to make that one. So,
in the 6th spot is The Purge: Election Year with $6.1 million. Universal's third film in that franchise has taken in $71 million domestically so far. So, yeah, expect to see another film. In the 7th spot is Central Intelligence from Warner Brothers Pictures with $5.3 million. At number 8 is The Infiltrator from Broad Green Pictures. That film brought in a disappointing $5.3 million from 1,600 theaters. I was hoping that would do better, but yeah.
Well, you know, it's not getting a lot of press, and it's Bryan Cranston is the headliner, so that's about to be. Just the fact that it's in the top 10 is
it's
probably
rated R.
A triumph.
It's not particularly good.
Correct. It's rated R. It seems more like a September, October type film than
a TV type film.
In the 9th spot is The BFG with $3.7 million. Another disappointing film. You know, like as if Disney cares. Ticket sales in the U.S. now stand at $47 million. Independence Day Resurgence from 20th Century Fox is in the number 10 spot with $3.5 million. And a film that we championed, The Shallows, is number 11. This film, the Blake Lively film, shark film, brought in $3 million to its $51 million domestic haul.
Okay.
Thus far. And rounding out the 12 is The Conjuring 2 from Warner Brothers Pictures with $0.9 million. Notable newcomers have an impact internationally this weekend with Fox's upcoming Ice Age Collision Course taking the number 1 spot and the number 1 market share position in 35 markets, earning $53.5 million from 15,000 screens in 51 countries. And in limited releases, Amazon Studios' Cafe Society, Woody Allen's nostalgic look at 1930s Hollywood, the comedy, which stars Kristen Stewart and Jesse Eisenberg, opened with $355 million for 5 locations.
Well, you said $355,000, right?
Oh, I'm sorry,
$355,000. Wow, that's the most of Woody Allen movies ever made.
Yes. Thank you. Exactly. But that film's off to a really good start. Opening this coming Friday is Justin Lin's Star Trek Beyond from Paramount Pictures. Fox will also open, as we said, Ice Age Collision Course. The horror flick Lights Out from Warner Brothers also opened.
Yeah, we saw that.
Absolutely fabulous. The movie opens. Bleecker Street's Captain Fantastic also opens, and we're offering screening passes for that. And Hunt for the Wilder People is also opening.
Mm-hmm.
And also on a side note, in London over in Europe was the Star Wars celebration that took place over the weekend, and fans were introduced to the new Han Solo from the Han Solo standalone movie. And we also got to see a new sizzle reel, a new poster for Star Wars Rogue One.
Exciting. Mr. Trump, Michelle just mentioned Woody Allen, and you and Woody Allen are both New Yorkers. Are you friends with Woody?
I, once in a while, bless him with my presence. I mean, he's okay. I mean, I can't believe that you said that. I can't believe what you're doing to me. I mean, my hair's receding even more. I'm looking worse than Larry the Three Stooges. I mean, what's next? You don't want to talk about my movies, just about The Babysitter or something?
That was Woody Allen, who just stopped by to say hello to Mr. Trump, by the way.
Okay.
All right. Well, Michelle, thanks a lot. I hope you can call again next Monday. And we'll find Lights Out or Captain Fantastic or whatever. Ice Age. I saw Ice Age, by the way, yesterday.
Right now I would think that'd be maybe number 1.
Maybe.
See how Star Trek does.
Okay. Well, thanks for calling, and let's talk to you again next Monday.
All right.
All right.
Guys,
see ya.
Talk to you later.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
And that was Michelle McHugh talking about the top 12. Mr. Trump, I know you got to go. You got to head back to a convention over there in Cleveland. I guess you got a plane waiting for you over at St. Louis Airport.
I'm going to go there in a limo.
Oh, okay. A limo to Cleveland from St. Louis. Okay.
That's right.
Even though and the convention starts today.
A 787.
Okay. From where to where?
Wherever I want.
Okay, all right. Well, thanks a lot for joining us here, Mr. Trump, and good luck with the election in November.
Hey, look, I've already won.
Okay, you have. All right, that was Donald Trump. This is so exciting. Oh, look who's coming in. It's our friend Chris Sanford. Chris Sanford's going to join us through the rest of the podcast. Hey, Chris.
Well, I'll do the best I can after that guy left.
Did you see Trump out there in the hall?
Yeah, he looked at me, and then I felt, you know, like that was enough.
Okay. He was an orange blur zipping past you.
He was, yeah.
All right, well, good. Well, Jim and I have got some movie reviews to do here, but Chris Sanford is a friend of mine. He's a local stand-up comic and an impressionist. I call him the Man of a Thousand Faces. Did I christen you with that title, or is somebody?
Or would it be voices?
It would be
Man of a Thousand Voices. Duh.
Okay. The mannerisms won't go over on the radio real well, but I could try.
Yeah, Man of a Thousand Voices, Chris Sanford. And Chris is an old friend of mine. Back when I used to do my Super 8 movie Madness show, I would often invite Chris, and when I would announce whatever movies I was showing the following month, Chris would always kick in with a few voices. How many voices do you do, Chris? Like,
actually, probably past and present, anything from something really famous to really obscure, about 500.
Wow, that's amazing.
And like I say, the weird part of it is some of them become really famous and then they fade. Yeah. And then with cable and all this, all of a sudden, you know, some of them actually come back.
Good. I'm glad you were able to join us today. Let's talk about some of these movies we got to review here, Jim.
Certainly.
Let's see. How about a quick review? Or not, doesn't have to be quick. How about a review of this movie that Michelle just mentioned called Hunt for the Wilder People? Did I say that title correctly?
You are correct. Actually, it's actually refers to the wildebeest, so it's kind of a conglomeration of that.
Wilder People.
Yes.
Wilder People.
All this right. is from director-writer Taika Waititi, who you might remember directed the very funny What We Do in the Shadows,
vampire
mockumentary. Very funny. He had also directed a few years ago Eagle versus Shark. So this is his third feature film. As we speak, he is directing Thor Ragnarok.
Oh, yeah.
So he's been recruited to the big leagues. Marvel has grabbed him up, and it's a good thing because this new movie is a winner. It's actually based on a book by a fellow named Barry Crump. It's all set in New Zealand, as What We Do in the Shadows was. It's about this little kid named Ricky Baker. He's you would consider him husky. He's a little little butterball who's been bounced around to different foster homes. He's at his last chance place, his last chance home. As we meet him, he's being delivered to the farm of a woman named Bella, who lives right on the outskirts of the wilderness. She shares this this sort of farm ranch with a surly fellow named Heck, who is played by Sam Neill, the same fellow from Jurassic Park.
And Event Horizon.
That's right. That's right. Ricky is a very funny character. He's about 13 years old. I think he's part Maori. He's a little chunky guy, but he adores American hip-hop. He's got the whole rapper outfit on with the chains and the hat and the big puffy coat. And, of course, when he meets his new mom, who's played by Rima DeWatta, it goes off to a rocky start because she takes
Rima DeWatta?
Rima DeWatta.
Oh, okay, there you go.
Yes, that's nice. It's off to a rocky start because she takes one look at her and says, "Oh, honey, you ate all the pie." And it was like, ugh. Things get a little better the next day after he attempts to run away. She finds him in the woods outside the place there. And all of a sudden, the dog runs past her. And she says, "Oh, we got one." And she runs into the forest where the dog is sort of cornered a wild pig in a gully, and this woman who's in her 50s or so takes out a knife, leaps into there, and takes care of the pig, butchers the pig, kills it. And the kid, Ricky, is looking in amazement and horror. It's like, oh my gosh, this is a violent, bloody, horrible thing. And then he's thinking, well, this is the coolest old person I've ever met. They finally get to warm up to each other. She even throws him a birthday party that evening and gives him a present, a pit bull puppy. And the puppy he immediately names after his favorite person of all time. He names the puppy Tupac.
There you go.
And,
so is this a comedy?
It is very funny. Yeah. This kid, Julian Dennison, he is fantastic.
Anybody from What We Do in the Shadows in this film?
Actually, yes, yes. You remember the leader of the werewolves who didn't like the guys cursing? He says, we're werewolves, not swearwolves.
Yeah.
He plays a crazy character in the woods called Psycho Sam, who's sort of a Ted Kaczynski wannabe. He's kind of trying to live off the grid. And, well, it ends up the mother passes away. It looks like the kid's going to have to go back into the foster care system. But he takes off again and gets lost in the woods, so Heck has to go rescue him. But while he's rescuing him, the head of the foster care agency has come back, and she believes that Ricky's been kidnapped by Heck.
Right.
So they have to scrounge in the woods, and they become a legend. Oh, boy, is it funny.
Okay.
It's really entertaining. It has a little bit of the Wes Anderson in there. They have... Mm-hmm. Little chapter headings, and they meet crazy people in the woods besides Psycho Sam, but it's really entertaining.
So is this going to get a broad release, or is this just going to play over at the Landmark?
It's going to play over at Frontenac. I hope it'll expand. I hope it does so well that it expands.
Yeah. So are you reviewing this for WeMovie?
Yeah, I'm going to give it 4.5 stars. Really great.
All right, well, great. So look for Jim's review of Hunt for the Wildepeople Thursday night over at WeAreMovieGeeks.com. All right, I'm going to review now Ice Age Collision Course.
The mother of all asteroids screaming towards us, but I've got a plan. Who's with me?
Crashing Eddie reporting for duty.
Duty.
Ice Age Collision Course is the fifth, believe it or not, in this goofy Ice Age series, which...
Only five? It seems like there's been more.
I know. It seems like... I think 2007 was the first one, and they started out kind of nice, but they keep adding characters. You know, they started out with Roy Romano and Dennis Leary as this mammoth and the saber-toothed tiger, and they have these adventures. And there's always Scrat, which I guess he's half rat, half squirrel, and he's chasing the acorn. Then they've had Scrat Shorts.
Oh, yeah.
In addition to that, so we've seen these characters, but then in parts 2 and 3 they added all these characters. John Leguizamo shows up as. I forget. I think he was a sloth.
Yeah.
And then Jennifer Lopez and his other actor voices. But then they have to bring these characters back. So by the time they get to part 5, Roy Romano and Dennis Leary are kind of in the background because they just have to make room for all these characters. But Roy Romano is always good.
Hey, 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 hey. Look, I'm a mastodon. Come on, hey, hey. Why wasn't my brother, what's his name, Robert in there?
Well, let me tell you something. Raymond, you don't impress anybody, because I know what you are.
You can't insult me. I'm a big mammoth.
And, of course, Dennis Leary is always good.
I know how all these people were wiped out. I know the cavemen were wiped out because they couldn't get over-the-counter drugs.
And then this new one, they introduce Simon Pegg as this weasel. The plot has to do with a meteor that is coming to destroy Earth, and... Simon Pegg as this weasel has an idea of how to stop it. I'm not really want to waste too much time talking about this movie because it's very, very dispensable. I've sat through a couple of these Ice Age films. I don't understand why anyone would really want to go see it except they've already seen Finding Dory and The Secret Life of Pets and their kids are stuck. I think, it looks good. The animation's top-notch, but it's just... it's a series that was never particularly good in the first place, and this is one of the weaker entries. I will be reviewing Ice Age Collision Course later on in this week, probably Thursday night over at WeAreMovieGeeks.com, and I'll probably give it maybe 2 out of 5 stars. I really don't recommend at all this new Ice Age film. Let's move on, though. Jim saw something that he does recommend, and that's called Captain Fantastic.
We can't go to Mommy's funeral. We have to do what we're told.
We want to see Mom.
Grandpa can't impress us. Some
sailor. Right now, this is your first real test. Remember your training.
They have hot dogs.
What's cola?
Poison water.
What the heck is this Captain Fantastic movie about, Jim?
Well, it is not another Marvel Studios film. It's not another comic book hero. It's about a fellow. We talked about Psycho Sam in Hunt for the Wilderpeople living off the grid. Well, this guy, Captain Fantastic, a.k.a. Ben, played by Viggo Mortensen, who we may remember from the Lord of the Rings films. He was Aragorn in those films.
In History of Violence.
Oh, yes. And Eastern Promises.
Nominated for an Oscar.
Last time we saw him, he was playing Sigmund Freud, I believe. And
he's here, as a matter of fact.
So my name's Viggo Mortensen. I always thought it was Viggo, man. Oh, I tell you, I remember Hidalgo. Oh, I rode that horse. Omar Sharif was in it. Hello, I'm Omar Sharif. I made having a gap in my teeth popular before David Letterman. Look, I'm the one here, just day in the background.
So is this movie any good, Captain Fantastic?
Oh, it is fantastic. It's wonderful. It's a domestic drama. It's set in the modern age. It's about this fella living off the grid with his family. He's got six kids ranging in age from around 6 or 7 years old to 18. One of them is wanting to go off to college. He's having to take care of them himself right now because his wife's in the hospital when we first meet this group. They're foraging. They're going into town every once in a while for supplies. We get the word that his wife has passed, and his father-in-law, who is played by Frank, the great Frank Langella, tells him over the phone if he comes out to the funeral, the family's living in Washington State. If they travel to Phoenix for the funeral, they will get arrested, or he will arrest the father at least. So he packs the kids in a school bus, I should say, and says, oh, the heck with it. Let's go down there. On the way down there, they stop off with some relatives played by Catherine Han and Steve Zahn, a very funny scene where they try to get accustomed to modern society, and they're kind of socially stunted. They finally do make it to the funeral. There's a big family clash. I should tell you, though, this I think is maybe Vigo's best performance in years. I predict he could get a nomination. I think he'll definitely get some critics' awards for this. The young actors playing the kids in this are just fantastic. Of course, Frank Langella is great in everything he does. He's paired with Ann Dowd, who we might remember from Compliance. Mm-hmm. Great family drama.
Who directed this film?
A fellow named Matt Ross wrote and directed it, and he's perhaps better known as an actor. He's on the HBO series Silicon Valley now, and the only other feature he's directed was 28 Hotel Rooms. Mm-hmm. But this is very, very strong, this film. So, there's always one film that opens up in the summer that's going to be talked about at Oscar time, and everyone was thinking it was going to be Free State of Jones. I think it's Captain Fantastic. I think it's really nice. It's just going to open at the Frontenac, I believe, on Friday.
Or Hell and High Water opens.
That's going to be in August, though, so it's a little closer to the fall.
All right. But you're reviewing it? Are you reviewing that for your movie?
No, I believe Kate is. I think they're going to have a screening tomorrow, and if she can't, I will certainly sing its praises.
I think I'm seeing that tomorrow night.
Yeah, because I would definitely give it at least 4, maybe 4.5 stars. It's very well done. But it's not for the sensitive, because be warned, and Aragorn's sword is fully unsheathed in it, so be careful.
Thanks for sharing. All right, well, good. Well, so Jim highly recommends Captain Fantastic. Let's see, let's do a quick review of Lights Out.
Every time I turn off the lights, there's this woman waiting in the shadows.
I see her, too.
We saw Lights Out last week. Lights Out is a new horror film, PG-13 horror film, I should point out. And usually these PG-13 horror films aren't very good. This one's pretty good. It's not great. It's not bad. It's got this... In the trailer, you see this sequence where somebody turns the lights off, and there's this silhouette of this kind of craggly-looking woman, and it's kind of scary. Then they turn the lights on, and the silhouette has disappeared. They turn the lights off, and it's back. They turn the lights off. Turn the lights on and it's gone. They turn the lights off and it's there again, but it's closer. And then there's a big shocking jolt of music. And it's pretty effective. They show that in the trailer. The movie starts with that scene as well. And that's a scary little hoarder gag, but it seems like this whole movie is based around that gag. How many times do we see that gag in this movie, Jim? Like 50?
537.
Yeah. So it seems like the whole movie is like they came up with this clever little visual, and they just try to write a movie around it to some success. It's not as bad as, The Forest or The Gallows or a few other PG-13 horror movies of the past year or two. It's kind of simple-minded. It only runs about 82 minutes. But basically, there's this little boy who lives with his mother, played by Maria Bello. And she had been in a mental institution many, many years earlier, along with this other girl. What was the little girl's name?
I forget. Well,
Diana or something?
Yeah,
or?
Diana. Diana. Yeah. And Sophie is Maria Bella's character. Okay. Yeah.
So Diana somehow died at this mental institution as a child, so her ghost haunts Maria Bello's house.
Yeah, Diana was ultra sensitive to light.
Yeah, that's right.
So they were trying to do an operation on her to cure her that. Yeah. And of course, things went badly.
It's not particularly scary, but it's not a miserable way to spend 85 minutes either. If you like horror films,
I thought I heard you say after the screening, serviceable.
Yeah.
So that sums it up. It pushes the right buttons when it's supposed to. So you know.
So I guess we could stop talking about this movie. There's not a whole lot to say about it. Michael Hafner, I believe, is going to be reviewing that for WeAreMovieGeeks.com Thursday evening. I think he may have liked it a little better than we did.
Yeah, Teresa Palmer does what she can as the heroine of it, but yeah. it's just not very interesting.
No, it's a little forgettable. All right, let's move along then. What do we still have to
read? We got a big one.
We got the big Ghostbusters.
What do we think of these Ghostbusters? Are they to be taken seriously?
You take that aisle, I'll take the far one.
Okay, you sweaty freaks. I'm about to save you from this. Go! Ah!
Okay, so I don't know if it was a race thing or a lady thing, but I'm mad as hell.
All right, given that's a Ghostbusters. You seen the Ghostbusters yet, Chris Sanford?
No, I haven't, but I was wondering, you know, you said Melissa McCarthy's in it. Why didn't it have Billy Gardell? Remember the Mike and Molly character?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Hey, how come I'm not in it, huh? Hey, this is Billy Gardell. I'm just as big and fat as she is.
Anyways, Ghostbusters. Kate Marquis reviewed Ghostbusters for
Movie Geek.
She gave it 4.5 stars. I don't know if I would have gotten quite that enthused about it, but I would have given it maybe 3.5. It definitely works better than I was expecting it to. The trailer looked really lame, and I had pretty low expectations for this. But actually, maybe it was a hard movie to cut a trailer around or something, because it is. But it is much better than the trailer. It's pretty darn entertaining. I'm not going to go into the story too much. It's pretty, I guess, a fairly faithful remake of Ghostbusters.
Well, it doesn't take a whole lot of the plot of the first one. But yeah, it definitely, well, it's inspired, of course, by that first one. And it's practically a love letter to that 84 original.
Yeah.
You know, there's lots of, you've heard there's lots of cameos.
Oh, yeah.
They're very respectful. And it's really entertaining.
I think it works. It works. It works for, I want to say, three reasons. I want to say it's funny. It's not hilarious, but you know, the original Ghostbusters wasn't all that hilarious either. It was more nostalgic.
Well, I was laughing right from that first scene when they're with this guy is doing the tour of the house.
Where
he said that it has the anti-Irish defense system.
Yeah, that was a funny scene. That guy was funny. I thought it was going to be actually funnier. I go, this movie's funny. But for example, they bring Bill Murray back.
They want to have my high energy presence in there. You know, I'm the kind of person you might have to call security. Had me strapped down. I'm almost semi-comatose.
But to me, that scene with Bill Murray was kind of a wasted opportunity. That wasn't a very funny scene. The writing in that scene was kind of weak.
Yeah, but that's only like a minute or two of it. The interplay between the ladies is really strong.
Oh, true. But I think the cameo with Dan Aykroyd was actually funnier.
Yeah, well, I get that staccato voice. And the thing of it is, it's sort of a contrast to Bill Murray. If you can end up sounding like, this is Bob Dole.
And, of course, not only do those two show up, but Ernie Hudson shows up.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm Ernie Hudson. I'm surprised you even mentioned me. Those other two guys are big stars, man.
Well, I wasn't sure Ernie Hudson was going to show up, actually. I thought, I can't believe Ernie Hudson has a cameo. They bring him in at the very last minute.
Well, Harold Ramis has a cameo in it, and he passed away 2 years ago. But, which I really enjoyed. Be on the lookout for that in, like, the first 10 minutes of the film.
It is very nostalgic. I think that's the way it works the best. They bring back the Stay Puft Marshmallow Man. They bring back
Slimer.
Slimer, and Slimer's got a whole family in this one.
And
then they bring back, you know, the fire station, the hearse. So all those little elements from the first one they bring back, which I think was very, very smart.
Yeah, the script is by director Paul Feig, along with a woman named Kate Diphold, who has a role in it. She's the real estate agent that you meet at one point shows them the firehouse. But she had worked with Feig and Melissa McCarthy on The Heat.
I don't think the script is as funny as his scripts for The Heat and Spy and Bridesmaids. I mean, those movies are rated R for one thing. He seemed to be having to work within the PG-13 parameters, and you bring in all these special effects and action sequences. So I don't think this movie's all that funny. Kristen Wiig is really good. She's a pro. I mean, some of these gals are pretty good.
Oh, yeah. This Kate McKinnon is definitely a movie star after this film. She's really strong in it, I think.
I thought Kate McKinnon was really obnoxious.
She's a joy.
She's all wrong. She's always on. She's always, up here. She's mugging. Where somebody like Kristen Wiig knows how to play it sort of down to earth, so then when the script requires her shifting into comedy mode, it's more effective. Where Kate McKinnon was to me, she was trying. She was a TV actress trying to consciously steal this film, and I just found her annoying. In fact, she kind of reminded me of who was the kid, Adam Devine, and that awful Bill.
She's much better than him.
She is, and this is a much better movie than that. But I had the same complaint about her than I had about him, is that she's just
She's the wild card in this, and she's unpredictable, and she's almost like a Harpo Marx type character.
She could have taken it down a couple of.
Someone who does take it down for the film from her TV appearance is Leslie Jones, and she's very strong in that.
She's got a couple of really funny lines.
Yeah. Oh, well, there's a sequence, and it reminded me because the next night we saw Lights Out, which starts out in a dressmaking factory with a bunch of mannequins. So I kept on thinking about the scene where she looks into this room where there's a bunch of mannequins, and she says, well, that's a room full of nightmares.
That's one of the funniest bits in it.
We had mentioned about the real comic gem in this. That's Chris Hemsworth as their receptionist, Kevin. He's hysterical.
Yeah, Chris Hemsworth.
I'm a baritone Australian. I look like more of the hunk type, but I do have a comic sense.
Very good.
Oh, and this job interview scene that he is in is just hysterical. Yeah, I got to tell folks to try to stick around for all the end credits, because not only is there a little bumper extra scene at the end of the end credits, but there's a lot of funny stuff going on as the names are rolling past.
And Sigourney Weaver shows up during the end credits.
That's right. And if you can, I usually don't recommend paying the extra money for the 3D, but the 3D is really good. They do a thing where it looks like it's letterboxed. You got a black border at the top and the bottom, and then when something comes at the camera, it breaks that bottom border.
Yeah, it comes out of that. But I've seen that before. And I was watching that. I go, where have I seen them do this before? And then I realized it was G-Force, where it's matted. It's faux widescreen, so it's matted with black bars at the top and bottom, and then ray guns and things like that pop out of the top and bottom of the screen. It's pretty effective, though.
Yeah. It's pretty well done.
So it's a very good comedy. Ghostbusters, like I said, I would have given it 3.5 stars. How many would have you given it?
Oh, solid 4 for me.
Jim would have given it 4. I would have given it 3.5. And Kate Marquis at We Are Movie Geeks gave it 4.5. So go see Ghostbusters. All right, I think we are done reviewing movies. Good for us. Next week, we'll be back. I've seen Cathay Society, which is Woody Allen's terrific movie.
So you're going to talk about that next Monday?
Yeah, we'll talk about that next Monday. And you know who's in that? Steve Carell.
Steve Carell. I was in The Office, and we had such sensual subjects like inkjets, bottled water, and copy paper. I was in the Get Smart movie, and I have a lot in common with Don Adams, the nose.
Well, don't worry about it. Missed it by that much, and remember, I'll be in danger constantly and loving it.
Don Adams, ladies and gentlemen. And we'll also review... What else were we
Well, we it? Might review so, Star Trek if I can get out to see it. Yeah. Hopefully, they're not going to show it to the press, so make of that what you will.
Yeah, I wonder if this new Star Trek has a cameo by some of the original cast members, like, William Shatner.
Scotty, Bones, Spock. Scotty, get my ship out of there.
Interesting. Fascinating. Totally illogical.
Jim, Spock's at it again.
Captain, there's something on the screen, sir. Captain, this is Mr. Sulu. Captain Kirk, I think you have something against me. I think I know what it might be.
So, Star Trek opens Friday, and they're not showing it to us.
Those bums.
And it's getting good reviews.
Remember Patrick Stewart?
Oh, maybe Patrick Stewart shows up in it.
I'm Captain Jean-Luc Picard of the United Federation, Starship Enterprise. I now have an HBO comedy series. Shakespeare and Star Trek meets Benny Hill and the Three Stooges.
And I heard he's singing cowboy songs now, too.
Oh, my.
Yes.
All right, so we'll be back next week to review those. Let's talk about a few things going on locally. Relayed at the Tivoli is a show that I host every weekend over at the Tivoli at midnight. Last weekend, we showed Alfred Hitchcock's Rear Window. That's really my favorite movie by the master Alfred Hitchcock.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Good morning, more likely. And welcome to We Are Movie Geeks.
And then, of course, that starred the great Jimmy Stewart.
The thing of it is, I was just sitting there in that wheelchair, and I looked across, and I couldn't believe it. I said to Grace Kelly, and I
why are you telling me these things? You know I can't take it. I'm so feminine.
Well, I don't care about... I saw Perry Mason murdering somebody, and I...
Well, I'm Raymond Burr. Yes, I did murder someone, so I called my alter ego up, Perry Mason, and he got me up because, believe it or not, he takes a bribe.
There you go. And of course, you know, if you want to go see Hitchcock on the big screen and you live in St. Louis, you're in luck. Just last Saturday, we showed over at the High Point, we showed Suspicion that starred, of course, Cary Grant.
Yes, hello, this is Cary Grant, undoubtedly. Movie Geeks is an affair to remember.
Remember Nigel Bruce was in that, too?
That's right, Nigel Bruce was.
Every movie I made, I'm always a bumbling idiot. I don't know what's going on with this. It's all right, because I do that best and I get paid for it.
So they get a good crowd for that, Tom?
They had a big crowd for Rear Window, which kind of surprised me.
Really?
And then they had a huge crowd for Suspicion. Yeah, I mean, they always do with that Saturday morning classic series over at the High Point. I think people just show up and they don't really care what's showing. They just want to go see an old movie at the High Point, which is the best movie theater in town to see an old movie.
Oh,
or a new
yes.
movie, in my opinion. In fact, the Woody Allen movie starts on the 29th. I'm going to go see it again. But if you like Hitchcock, fortunately, as I mentioned last week, the new Midnight at the Tivoli schedule has Psycho. And that, of course, has a great performance by Anthony Perkins.
Yeah. My mother, she won't let me come out very often. Would you like to meet my mother? She's in the rocking chair right now.
Yes.
Other stuff going on around town. Let's see. Our buddies over at Destroy the Brain do Late Night Grindhouse. Last week they had Deep Red. Next month, I'm not sure what the date is. I want to say it's like August 5th and 6th or something like that.
And they're
showing
right.
Dr. Butcher, M.D., also known as Zombie Holocaust. That's a crazy, gory, gut-munching, entrail-eating Italian horror film from, I'd say, around 1979, 1980, something like that. I saw the drive-in a few times back in the day. That'll be a lot of fun. This weekend, I mentioned Midnight at the Tivoli. I forgot to say what was showing this weekend. It is Akira. Akira is a beloved Japanese animated adventure from, I want to say 1990.
And
that always gets big crowds when we show that.
That's a good one, I tell you. I'm not a big fan of the Japanese animation, but boy, mm-hmm. this is a good one, I tell you.
And then, of course, there's my show that I host, which is 16mm Double Feature Night. Last month, I showed...
Day of the Earth Stood Still.
That's right.
And Richard Pryor live in concert.
Yeah, Richard Pryor live in concert was interesting because I was supposed to show Richard Pryor live on the Sunset Strip, and then my friend Roger brought the wrong Richard Pryor movie. He brought Richard Pryor live in concert. But I don't think anybody noticed until about halfway through, and I don't think anybody really cared. I mean, it was 90 minutes of pretty brilliant stand-up from Mr. Richard Pryor.
Man, I tried to teach Gene Wilder how to be black, and it didn't work. Man, I mean, he put on the makeup, and it was embarrassing.
Well, I tried. I did the best. I mean, I tried hard.
But next month, which is August 2nd, I will be showing a double feature of King Kong versus Godzilla. And then after that, I'm going to show a great little thriller from 1978 called Saint Ives. Saint Ives has a great cast. It stars Charles Bronson.
Hey, Charles Bronson, I'm laid back. I'm the kind of guy that could take a horseshoe and bend it into a bow tie.
And you know who else is in that?
With his face.
With the great Oscar-winning actor John Houseman.
Yes, I was in The Paper Chase, Puritan Diet, and Smith Barney because you've earned it.
And, of course, the beautiful Jacqueline Bisset.
Mr. St. Ives, do you want to stay over for the night? Do you need lodgings?
Yeah.
And, of course, the great German actor Maximilian Schell.
Why is it that every time that you have a psychiatrist in the movie, it always has the German accent? Actually, I'm Swiss.
There you go. And that is August 2nd at the Way Out Club starting at 8 o'clock. That is free. Double feature of King Kong versus Godzilla and St. Ives. Although we do set out a jar to take donations for the National Children's Cancer Society.
Hey, is Jeff Goldblum in that, too?
Jeff Goldblum is in that, as a matter of fact.
Yeah, you know, I started out as a mugger, but I reformed, and now I have my own, Law & Order spinoff.
And he's in the runaway hit of the summer, Independence Day Resurgence.
The runaway hit that people are running away from.
That's right.
And then locally, I saw over at Webster University. They have a great film series at Webster University. Just this past Saturday, I saw Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf. Oh, what a classic that was, with the great Richard Burton and Liz Taylor.
Good evening, I'm Richard Burton. And I'm afraid of Virginia Woolf. Actually, I'm more afraid of Elizabeth Taylor.
Oh, I feel like a cat on a hot tin roof.
That's the wrong movie. Jump off.
And, George Siegel and Sandy Dennis were in that, of course.
This is George Siegel, and I think you'd be better off watching The Owl and the Pussycat.
I don't know why you're afraid of her. She's not that tall.
All right. So that was... Yeah, next week Jim's going to be back to review. What's the name of that Meryl Streep movie?
Florence Foster Jenkins.
Yeah, and that I haven't seen that, but that's a true story about a woman who wants to be an opera singer, but she has a lousy voice.
Oh,
what
yes.
a crazy concept. It's based on a true story, isn't it?
Oh, yes. Yeah, real person.
And then her co-star in that movie is Hugh Grant.
Hello, I'm Hugh Grant. Do you remember a movie that I made a number of years ago called Four Weddings and a Funeral?
Uh-huh.
Right. Actually, then I became embroiled in tabloid fodder, and I thought, you know, why not a movie, even from my controversy? Four hookers and a judge, and it never went over.
I think we've covered most of the local movies, although we do want to give a shout-out to the St. Louis Filmmakers Showcase. That starts actually last night. That is where this has become an annual thing. It's gotten very good and very competitive, and this is where St. Louis filmmakers enter their films. There's feature films, there's short films, there's documentary films, there's experimental films, there's documentary shorts.
Were you saying there's about five feature films?
There was five complete features
wow.
this year. Last year there was only two.
Yeah.
And I've watched them all because I'm one of the judges, and tonight we've got our meeting to decide what we're going to give the awards to. This meeting could get pretty hot because I know a couple of the other people on the committee aren't in agreement with where I think the award should go. So
yeah, our pal Vanessa's film showed yesterday,
yeah, that's right.
didn't it?
It showed Finchin, last night yeah. at 6:30. Our Michael Hafner from our
yes.
website has a documentary short that I think that showed yeah. yesterday, actually.
He says, Maddening, a Stitching
yeah,
Tale?
Yeah, the documentary. I think when Michael was working as a framer over at Artmart, this woman kept coming in to get her artwork framed, and Michael was sort of a little fascinated by what she was bringing in and got to talk to her. And did you watch it?
Yes, I did. I screened it over the weekend, yeah.
And she has sort of had some mental illness and had been institutionalized, and her mind is sort of reflected in her art, and Michael thought that was fascinating, and so he made this documentary. It runs about 10 minutes. Hopefully they'll be showing that again at the St. Louis International Film Festival in November. There's a party Thursday night where we're going to be handing out the awards. It's like the St. Louis Oscars. It's a big deal. And then, well, I guess next Monday we'll report on what won exactly. So that is the St. Louis Filmmaker Showcase. It's not too late to go see films tonight and tomorrow night and Wednesday night and Thursday night. So go to cinemastlouis.org.
Are they all being shown over at the Tivoli?
All at the Tivoli, all on
wow.
the big screen at the Tivoli. Yeah, they nice. Do that every year. But it's, I mean, like I say, it's gotten really popular. They get big crowds for these films. There'll be a big crowd at the party. People will take this stuff very, very seriously. And they should. And making a film is hard work.
Oh, my goodness.
Let's see. We lose anybody? We did. We lost Yumi Ito. Not exactly a household name. Yumi Ito was one of the Peanuts. The Peanuts were the two little fairies that sang to Mothra. I love the Peanuts, those little fairies. They were a lot of fun.
They brought them back for Destroy All Monsters, didn't they?
And,
for a couple seasons?
I know they brought them back for Ghidra, the Three-Headed Monster, and Godzilla versus the Thing. I'm not sure about Destroy All Monsters. You could be right. Yumi and Imi Ito were their names. Imi died 4 years ago at age 71, and Yumi just died over the weekend at age 75. So RIP to these little singing fairies from the Mothra films.
Imi, Yumi, and what, there's no Omi?
There's no Omi. There should, maybe there was. Maybe they were tripping.
Yeah.
The vowels, have a you know, yeah. English lesson.
Yeah. Sure.
So Chris Sanford, we got a few minutes to talk to you. You've been doing these celebrity voices for what, since you were a kid?
Yeah, pretty much, about 14, yeah.
Oh, yeah. What inspired you to do celebrity voices?
I think it might have been, you know, it's just kind of funny for people to say, you know, dude, you were inspired by Rich Little. When actually, it was Jonathan Winters.
Oh, yeah.
I had a record called Stuff and Nonsense, and he kind of did a performance piece. He did some impressions, but he also did some voices that he made up, created, you know, sound effects, jokes, mixed it up. And then I saw Gorshin, and I liked him. He was really accurate. But it's funny, you know, I mean, I liked Rich when I later on, but early on, even when I was in high school, I was a little bit behind. I don't know why I didn't know him, because at first they go like this, hey, do you like Rich Little? And I said, well, I said, yeah, I got rock and roll music. I think his name's Little Richard is what you're talking about. And I said, no. Because I somehow came upon Gorshin first, and it wasn't M. Batman either. Mm-hmm. It was a Riddler. I just saw him first, you know, I don't know.
Oh, yeah, he was a staple on the Sullivan Show. He was on there all the time, yeah.
And it took me to, I was about 17, 17 and a half, and oh, for crying out loud, I know who they're talking. I think I actually knew, but for some reason I was thought they were talking, because everybody was into rock and roll music, and I thought, Little Richard, what are you talking about? No. Anyways,
This is Rich Little, and I can do anybody, and I like photography.
What happened to Rich Little? He's still around?
Oh, yeah. He performed at the presidential correspondence dinner like about seven years ago.
Yeah, he's got to be in his mid-late 70s or 80, maybe.
Yeah, I recall there was a show called the NBC Craft Music Hall, and they did a special edition called The Copycats, in which they gathered Frank Gorshin and Rich Little, and I think
Marilyn Michaels
was on there. Perhaps. George Kirby was on that.
Travelina.
And yeah, they did
John
all these.
Boehner,
and John Boehner, did all these sketches as the, and I think they spun it off into a weekly TV show, and I loved that as a kid.
You know when that thing was on? Early 70s.
Yeah, maybe in the late 60s there. But you're talking about Gorshin. I remember a bit he did, I think, on the Dean Martin show and probably on the Sullivan show during the Batman craze. And he said, you know, they have different villains every week. So I was always wondering what it'd be like if you had, you know, different Batman and Robin every week. And then he did. I remember he did Batman and Robin as played by Burt Lancaster and Kirk Douglas, and it was hysterical.
You must do Kirk Douglas.
I'm Kirk Douglas. I'm getting sick and tired of people talking about my son Michael Douglas. First of all, I'll probably outlive him.
Probably.
Yeah.
But the thing of it is, just consider this. If it wasn't for Kirk Douglas, there wouldn't be any Michael Douglas. Enough said.
There you go.
I like Burt Lancaster. In fact, those were some of my kind of more unusual voices starting out, because I think that's when Gorshin, he just impressed me because he did the voice well, but he almost like assumed the character.
Oh,
All right, gather on. See things you've never seen before. Believe nothing you hear. Only half of what you see.
That was good. Now, I met you about 5 years ago when I was working on Vincentennial, the Vincent Price 100th birthday celebration. I think you reached out to me, and you said you do these voices, and would I need some sort of Vincent Price voice? And I said, sure, and you've been a good friend since. But you do a great Vincent Price.
This is Vincent Price. Remember the house on Haunted Hill?
Hey, you remember Elisha Cook?
Oh, yeah, Elisha Cook. Oh, yeah, sure.
Yeah. He offered his $10,000 and a gun. Guns won't work against them, and he knows the money doesn't bother him. He knows we won't be allowed to collect it because they won't let it. They're coming to get us, all of them. No.
And, of course, your Ronald Reagan is epic.
Well, this is Ronald Reagan, and, you know, everyone this year is claiming to be Ronald Reagan. I've got to tell you something. It was a hard act to follow. I could hardly do it. Some clown put some jokes in there once, and I came off as Ted Kennedy, and it didn't go over at the GOP convention.
So is there some voices that you've, like, really want to do, but you just can't wrap your chops around them?
I can't think of any right now, and it sounds like you're bragging or something. Let me put it to you this way. There were voices at times that I couldn't get, and I'd listen to them, and finally it occurred to me that the voice was kind of similar to my own. I'm not saying it was just like my own, but there was some kind of quality. It's like, I'll give you two examples, and they became some of my better ones early. It's not exactly, but you just...
This is Phil Donahue, and today my special guest is Ebenezer Scrooge of Christmas Carol fame. He would be on medication and group therapy, a functioning member of our society.
and it's, I don't know what it is, like, it's kind of centralized, like my voice, or... Good evening. This is the CBS Evening News. Diane Rather reporting for perhaps the last time. Mild tremors were felt in Washington today, but fear subsided, though, when onlookers realized it was only Governor Chris Christie jogging.
Yeah, it must be tough today with the hot actors, because they don't have the distinctive voices like the actors from the Golden Age. Like, I've never heard somebody attempt to do a George Clooney or Leonardo DiCaprio. You know, it's tougher these days, because you really had, you know, the Bogart and Gable were so distinctive, you know.
Hello, I'm Colin Firth of Mr. Darcy in Pride and Prejudice. Even though the voice is not bad, it's still not something that you really can, like for... Hello, I'm Christoph Waltz. It's easier to do Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Or how about Christopher Lee?
Hello, I'm Christopher Lee of Hammer Horror Films. You have no idea what it's like to be a vampire actor. I have no life whatsoever.
Yeah, I think you did that one at my Super 8 show. And you do some celebrities that maybe, Freddie Travellino would always do Jim Nabors and Carol Channing, and these sort of obvious people. But I always like that you do relatively obscure, George Sanders and Bruce Dern and other voices that you don't hear.
Remember Village of the Damned, the original? I mean, of course you remember. You guys know movies. I know them quite well, but you know them 10 times better than I do. But
hello, I'm George Sanders. This is my son, David.
Please, David, don't do that.
You know I don't like them, Father. You know what I'm going to do to people that I don't like.
Please, David, they don't deserve that.
All right. Hey, it's Bruce Dern, man. Yeah. Hey, you know, I was in the Cowboys. I forever will be remembered as the guy that killed John Wayne. Hey, Mr. Anderson, you're a hard man, sir.
That's a hard life.
Mm-hmm. but you are sort of a movie buff. What are some of your favorite movies of all time, Chris?
Probably. I like the probably Magnum Force with Clint Eastwood. I liked it better than the original Dirty mm-hmm. Harry. You know, like the playback and forth between him and Hal Holbrook. You know,
I figured I'd just come down here and see what's going on. What are you doing here, Callahan? Get back on stakeout. Yeah, well, I figured you could use me on a job like this, Briggs. Yeah, well, I just work for the city. Yeah, well, so do I, Harry, longer than you, and I never once had to take out my gun. Yeah, well, you're a good man, Lieutenant. Anybody can see that. A good man always knows his limitations.
Yeah. Even the old films, they even had snappier lines.
Yeah, now how did you, like, you know, back in the days before VHS tapes, where you couldn't just put in an actor and watch it back and forth over and over again to sort of hone your craft, how did you track down these voices to sort of mimic?
Whenever it came on TV, I'd try to watch it, or as time went by, a good tactic would be radio interviews of people.
Do you have like a little cassette recorder that you'd put up next to the speaker or whatever?
I tried that at times, and it just didn't seem to go over too much, and sometimes I would just listen to it. I'd look at the TV guy, just see what's coming on. Mm-hmm. Like sometimes you have guests on Carson or something, then I'd listen to it for a while, and it just seemed like I'd just percolate in the back of my mind later on something would... Like, I'll do some jacks for you, three jacks.
Okay.
Hey, this is Jack, like in Nicholson. You know, I hate karaoke. It sounds like a singing Japanese catfish.
Or Jack Palance.
You know, I believe in reincarnation. In a past life, I was a fire-breathing dragon.
This is Jack Black. I was in King Kong. Look, interspecies romance is not going to go over. You take the girl up there, you're running away from your problem. Sigmund Freud would have a lot to say about this.
So you've performed stand-up comedy.
Yes.
At clubs and things like that. Do you ever do like, who's got a voice and have people in the audience like throw a voice out and you try to do it? Is it part of your...
Sometimes I'll end up saying something. This is your chance to humiliate me. I said, this is a, you know, request time. Go ahead and ask me something that I can't do, and then I'll be embarrassed and never come back. No.
Has there been voices that people have thrown out that you haven't been able to do, or you're pretty much able to?
Believe it or not, I've been able to do most of the ads, but my past and present. Because, you know, now, in the olden days, you know, to a certain extent, I actually agree with what you're saying. They were more distinctive, the old voices. But people seem to not have as much... The movies and TV was more where it's at. Then later on, it branched into newscasters, sportscasters, athletes, cartoons, comics, talk show hosts, on and on and on. I mean, because some of these people get to be almost as much of a star as any TV or a movie actor ever was.
Oh, sure. Yeah, definitely.
All right, we're going to have to wrap this up, unfortunately, doggone it. We sure enjoyed having you on here. Good luck with all your voices. And maybe I know you're going to New York for a couple of months, but maybe when you get back, you can come back and join us again in the fall.
I would love to do that. Can I finish up with one more?
Oh, sure.
Okay, what would Sean Connery have to say about the state of the James Bond series? What's going to...
I'd like to address that if I could. I don't need some hack impressionist doing the voice. I can talk about it myself.
All right.
Look, with transgender and gender reassignment, it's going to come a time when the movie will start out with Bond as a man, and later on...
Oh, I'm the new James Bond, yeah. Oh, you've probably seen me. I'm Drew Barrymore on Turner Classic Movies. Oh, I think I'd be a great Bond.
Oh, yes?
Okay. Thanks a lot. Thanks again for joining us, Chris. Right,
thank you.
We'll be back next week, and we'll review Cafe Society and Star Trek and a few other movies. But for now, we got to sign off. I'm Tom Stockman.
Jim Batts.
Chris Sanford.
And listen again next week.
Black leather, black leather, hip, hip, hip. I got that feeling, black leather rock. Black leather, black leather, smash, smash, smash. Black leather, crash, crash, crash. Black leather, kick, kick, kick.
kill, kill, kill. I got that feeling, play me the rock. Black leather, black leather, smash, smash, smash. Black leather, crash, crash, crash. Black leather, kill, kill, kill. I got that feeling, black leather rock.
Forward in the battle, there, chaps.
Oh, that's right. Oh,